This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Shaoning, and this is The Morning Run with Philip C. It has just gone past 7:18 in the morning, and in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Adib Zalgalpi, who of Bauer Group Asia, on how the state of emergency affects UMNO's political strategy, which is a question we are also asking on Twitter this morning. UMNO, the question is, UMNO has said party politics will be held this year at a suitable time. So we're asking, can Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi retain leadership of the party? Do let us know what you think. But in the meantime, let's talk about palm oil, Malaysia, and the WTO, because Malaysia is taking legal action at the World Trade Organization.
Against the European Union and member states France and Lithuania for restricting palm oil-based biofuels as part of an EU renewable energy directive. Of course, Malaysia has called this a discriminatory action as it discounts palm oil from being counted in renewable energy targets, thus creating undue trade restrictions.
So our Plantations and Industry and Commodities Minister, Mohammad Khairuddin Ahmad Razali, said that the EU proceeded with implementing the directive without considering Malaysia's commitment and views, even after Malaysia gave feedback and sent economic and technical missions to Europe. So for a better understanding of this situation and what's at stake for the Malaysian palm oil industry, we speak to Kor Yu Ling, economist with Sergi Enam Advisors. Now, like we said, Malaysia is seeking consultations under the WTO dispute settlement mechanism. What can you tell us about this? I mean, does Malaysia have a case here, or is this really just more symbolic?
Hi, Shaoning. Hi, Phil. Yes, basically, it's quite an important issue for Malaysia and other palm oil producing countries. There's a great fear about the EU restriction. And if we look at the situation, I think it's quite important to note that, this WTO dispute settlement will often take some time. I had asked people in Colombia, they had a case on bananas and it took about 3 years. And I recently checked with Indonesia experts, and they're also expecting a three-year process for this, especially during COVID times. It's not going to be that fast. Indonesia basically logged it in December 2019, and WTO agreed to a panel in August 2020. So now I think the situation in Malaysia is that it appears it's been lagging logging in its own case against the EU biofuels new directive. And it's has said that it's a third party in the Indonesia situation. And it's interesting that there's actually 20 other countries who are also third parties on that, which implies that you can make oral statements at third party sessions, but not to be present in substantive meetings. So the key part would be for Malaysia to put in their case. And I think one of the important things is that there's a feeling that EU has been discriminatory because it picked out palm oil in its new regulation, and perhaps it has slipped up on that front. So it could be more than symbolic if that's the case. And one of the key things to look out for as well is, the sheer caliber of the different teams that are going in. Indonesia has a very well-regarded and well-known team. I think on Malaysia's front, we lack a bit of visibility there. And also another point is that Indonesia is actually quite, let's call it active in the WTO issues cases. They're there for the biofuel, chicken, polystyrene, cigarette paper, you name it, quite a few things. Malaysia is a lot less active, ceramic tiles and steel, and it hasn't, arguably, it hasn't put in a case for quite some time already. And also, do we have the EU able to stay ahead of the game? Because we do have a three-year dispute cycle, whereas as an economist, I look at the EU policy and they have regular updates. So could the EU stay ahead of this? So if that's possible, it could mean that the countries that are disputing this could be lagging on the situation. So I'm a little bit worried about that aspect.
Thanks, Yuling. So, hey, it's very interesting what you point out, that actually Indonesia is really taking the lead. They've had the case logged in. They actually have the experts there. So it really does sound malicious just being symbolic by putting throwing their head in the ring with respect to this. So what is really the big impact here you see in the short term for Malaysia with respect to palm oil trade with your EU?
Well, Malaysia, as you point out, has been lagging on this. And there's been a bit of a less of an urgency, perhaps, because it doesn't perceive that it's such an important issue. Into the EU biofuels and energy sector, Indonesia are really a lot bigger suppliers. But, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric and politics in this as well. Shorter term, Malaysia has also faced trade issues, you know, quite surprisingly, during the Pakatan administration, with Mahathir and India. So Malaysia got hit quite badly on that front. And luckily, it's coming back quite well. Prices are so high. So I think India doesn't want to be in a great dispute with a lot of people. But, you know, India has sort of filled its need for palm oil. So when that happens, the risk of trade tussles always increase. And what it means in the medium term for Malaysia also is that if Indonesia can sort of resolve the issue with the EU, and in fact, if Indonesia and the likes of Colombia can actually then comply. In fact, they under the restricted move on the EU, I think we shouldn't mistake this for a boycott. There's a lot of rhetoric that it's a boycott, but I think that's a bit misleading. Indonesia and Colombia can actually advantage from complying with the EU regulations, where they have clearer pathways than Malaysia, ironically. And if that's so, Indonesia will come into greater competition with Malaysia for export markets, especially if they also comply with the EU's call for higher food grade of palm oil that they would want to import. So then the competition would heat up for Malaysia. And of course, Malaysia's under great pressure as well from the US.
Yeah, and since you mentioned US, recently we did see FGV and Sime Darby plantations. I mean, both hit with withhold release orders from the US Customs and Border Protection. Sime Darby told us on our show last week that there was no issue, no systemic issue, claiming the accusations to be false. But what do you make of the situation, actually?
Well, it does appear to be a small market if you look at the volume and if you look at the business of a particular company like Sime Darby. But, you know, I kind of beg to differ a little bit because the US does buy high value added products. And even if we look at our core palm oil and palm kernel oil, we can tag China in 2019. Buying about $4 to $5 billion worth. And if I just add up the similar figures for the US, it's about $2 billion. And if we consider that Malaysia and Indonesia are at about half-half on that kind of market, obviously it fluxes. Malaysia is basically giving away about $1 billion, half of that to Indonesia, most likely in terms of demand. Of course, Latin America would try to pick some of that up. So, you know, two against 4 to 5 billion. I think US looks a little bit bigger if you look at it on that front. And I'm afraid that there is a lot of concern about systemic risks because obviously the protagonist will have to remain a more positive viewpoint. But when I talk to sustainability experts and those who are major exporters of sustainable products where there is value added in this, they are already saying that Malaysia is increasingly excluded as an origin. There's also great reputational risk and physical risk, actually, for the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, where a lot of Malaysian and the big exporters from Indonesia rely on this label for them to have a market entry to really the big global buyers. Mm. And we have Malaysia that's too prominent in social media, and there's a great deal of public groundswell of concern. So the big question is RSPO good enough? And Sime Darby is indeed one of the biggest suppliers of RSPO material. And everyone buys their palm kernel oil and palm kernels. So there could be all these repercussions from that. And, you know, in the industry parlance, there's already veering towards FGV-free, sign-free, meaning exclusions. And it would be very sad that if this is not rectified very quickly.
So, Yuling, one last question very quickly. How can Malaysia then improve the perception of our palm oil industry?
Well, I think we really need to put ourselves into the footing that clearly, you know, your buyer knows best. You know, it is a huge competition to supply to these markets. And I think we also need to look at the issues. I mean, if we do have, you know, even in peninsular Malaysia, you know, workers on plantations who have faced these labor risks, we need to address it very strongly, very with thoroughness, and I think also to be very convincing about the data and evidence that we produce against this. Because so far, I think if we look at how US owned soybean sector handles their sustainability, there's obviously question marks, but you know, they produce reams of data. And I'm afraid that's not something that we've really seen the palm oil industry proving, that, you know, this is a minority, this is, I don't know, 1% risk factor. You know, what's the incidence? So we need to resolve that.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Kaw Yew Ling, economist at Sergi Ernam Advisors, giving us our view on how we can improve Malaysia's palm oil industry, or at least the perception of it. But up next, we'll be discussing the economic outlook for Australia. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.